Hello and welcome to Writing About Dragons and Shit, a podcast where two authors and a writer get together and talk about the ways they tell stories. I'm one of your hosts, Trevor Bettis, writer of Idle Champions of the Forgotten Realms and host of Too Many Podcasts. And with me each week are two amazing people who are...
I'm Erin M. Evans. I am a fantasy writer. I'm best known for Empire of Exiles and the Brimstone Angels saga.
Yeah.
I'm B. Dave Walters. I say words about things. As of the time of this recording, it is National Bikini Day. So,
All right, hang on.
Yeah. you already know. You already know what's up over here. So.
Yes, very important to tonight's topic. Absolutely, Bikini Day. Okay, real quick before we start going. So I got a new keyboard over the weekend.
I saw pictures.
Yeah, it's very pretty. But I tape modded it, which is a thing I'd never done before, where you take the back of the keyboard off. So this keyboard is wired only. You cannot do this with wireless ones. You'll fuck it up. But since this is wired only, I took the back off of it and I put three layers of painter's tape on it.
Why? It's new.
So here's the thing, and then I put it back because it then reduces the amount of like space that there is in the board. And now when I type, it sounds like I'm just playing with Legos, and it just makes me want to write more.
Like, you made it quieter.
It is quieter. Does? Yeah. Yeah. Let me. I'm gonna turn on original sound. Tell me if y'all can hear this. I'm gonna put my mic right next to it.
There's some cute little noises.
That's kind of satisfying. Yeah.
It's extremely
satisfying. I gotta tell you, I find most mechanical keyboards are annoying as fuck. Because that, a lot of times
that would be this one.
We've had this conversation. I've asked you to move it away from the mic more than because a lot of times it's not even the keyboard itself so much as different noise gates are like obviously the fact that they're jackhammering, that's important, you know. And it's like, a dear friend of ours, the friend that you just mentioned that I shall not name in this context, but that friend was their setup was the worst for this. They taking notes, and I'm trying to do something spooky, and I'm all like, you know, the creature crawls up behind you. He's like a jazz typewriter. And I'm like, what?
I do think my wife is much happier with me writing on this one than that other one. Because, yeah, every one of the keys on the other one sounds like a loud mouse click. Yep. And I'm just going to town on it. And so the house is calmer now.
I can't get over the fact that the sun never sets where Erin is. I mean, obviously, Erin is always glowing, but the rest of Seattle, too, apparently.
Yeah. For full disclosure, we're recording at 9:08. It is still daylight behind Erin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yep. B-Dave and I are vampires right now.
Exactly.
The northern sun, kind of.
I will say I sorted out accessing threads there, so there you go. So now the days of victory. There it is.
I love that over the course of this show, you can hear the death of Twitter. Like a while ago, you can hear us talking about Hive and then Mastodon.
Everybody
just pick something. I'll stop this.
Yeah.
That's really it. It is as of yet nowhere has emerged as the heir apparent. That's the thing. There's a bunch of options, but nowhere clearly that it's like, oh, this is the next thing. And the chances that threads are that thing are extraordinarily slim.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'll see. Well,
Mr. Beast already has 100,000 followers after 4 hours, so, you know, there's that.
As I was just logging in, it literally was like, hey, do you want to follow on here everyone you follow on Instagram? And I was like, yeah. You know what I mean? Because that's legit.
Mm-hmm.
And there you go.
That is a benefit, because I will say this is a thing I'm not enjoying about Blue Sky, is hunting down people that I want to follow.
Yep.
Also, I don't know how to tell people how to follow me, because it doesn't have a little clicky, little quick kind of tag, does it? Mm. You have to be like, at Blueski, and
well, you know, I'm
downfall of it.
I'm looking for a wild Erin right there, you know, there she is. Oh, look at you, beat me to following me. I love that picture of you, buddy. I love that picture of you. But
thank you.
If you haven't seen Erin's social media glamour shot, you absolutely should. And then
I think
follow
it's my
her.
Author photo, but now I don't remember what I used.
Mm.
Yep.
been a while.
Also, just while we're lavishing praise on people, Trevor got a new haircut and he also looks extra hunky. So that it's just, I just, when I came in, I was like, oh, hey, I see your hair. See, like I pay attention. I care. You know, I notice the little things. That thing you did with your hair, I see it. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, well, you know, let me just say one last thing before we dive into the topic at hand, because now we're tangenting before the tangent. Which does that make what I'm about to say the actual topic and the topic the tangent?
We'll see.
But I've set in again on yet another screenplay. My goal is to be done by the end of next weekend, which is aggressive but doable. So I'll keep you posted.
Where are you at in the process?
I'm only like 10 pages in. However,
you're writing.
Writing. Yeah. Well, that's because the outline is the hard part. You know what I mean? Like the bones of what's actually going to happen are all laid out. Now I'm just fleshing this bad boy out. And I'll tell you, because normally people get very precious about their ideas. And quite frankly, that's kind of an amateur thing, because you can't copyright an idea. And if you're going to do it well and do it better than anybody wants to take your idea. But this one in particular, I think is pretty cool, is basically a James Bond type and a Jason Bourne type are on a freelance side mission to take down an Andrew Tate type.
Shut up and take my money.
Exactly. I feel like everybody, and one of the things I was telling Trevor right before we went on is like, obviously the words Andrew Tate are not going to appear anywhere in this script, and you guys who are listening, nobody tell him.
Yeah, you chill.
But if I'm like just a bald, tattooed, cigar smoking douchebag, and you know, you're like, that's me, I'm like, well, I feel like that's you saying that.
Yeah, you don't have to tell on yourself here.
Me saying that. And yet. Yeah. I posted something like that on Twitter recently where I was like, if there is a character in media that is racist or sexist or homophobic or bigoted in any way, and then you get upset about that character, it's like, well, you know, kind of self-owning here, but okay.
Well, I'm gonna start things off before we get to the main topic. So we tangent before the question before the topic. We're still trying to get through these. Thank you everyone who's been sending in emails for writing about dragons@gmail.com. I'm sorry we don't get to them quicker, but we're making our way through them. So we're going to do this one, which is from Francesca. And they say, hello to the best group of writers I've come across. Oh, well, thank you. Aww. You're too nice. I actually hadn't read that part beforehand because I usually skip the hello and now I feel weird. I'm new here.
I appreciate you just like skip the foreplay. It's all transactional. You're like, just get in the bed, you know?
I'm new here, only a few episodes in, and I love all y'all's personalities and tips. I thought I would shoot you my question. I'm a high school dropout struggling to stay focused on actual writing, and I am my own worst critic, which is going to come into play tonight.
The universe provides.
Yep. However, I have a few main characters that are in my head and I'm head over heels in love with, and plot scene ideas, and I all want it to come into action. I'm planning this to be a multi-character POV sci-fi fantasy. My work is all over the place. I want to work with the basic hero's journey, but I can't seem to thread everything together. I feel my characters have a right to tell their stories, and I want to give it that to them. Thank you so much for everything you guys do, and keep the episodes coming. Sorry about last week. So for me, this sounds to put it simply, an organization thing of like kind of getting a place to put down your thoughts and organize them.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also possible that, Francesca, you've got more ideas than you can fit together in a book.
Uh-huh.
And so outlining will help tell you whether or not these can kind of all be fit together in some fashion. Mm-hmm. It might still be the case that when you sit down to flesh that out, you realize it's a lot. But this is one of the kind of questions of multiple point of view, is do these stories fit together into a cohesive singular story? Mm-hmm. And you might find a way that they do, especially if thematically they're all kind of resonate and align in a way so that you are telling a story about, you know, the horrors of war or the differentiation of the self from your family of origin or whatever it is that you're actually telling about. If they all kind of fit along there, you can kind of weave those stories together. But it might be that in trying to do justice to these characters that you've come up with, either they are going to have to change to fit the story you're telling, or you separate them out and you let them have their own story over here. You can absolutely tell multiple stories in a single world. That is a time-honored tradition. But pick the one that, you know, that you feel like is the central stock of that multi-point of view story, and I would center it on that.
Yeah, I would say a couple things because I made notes. First of all, put out of your mind the fact that you're a dropout. You didn't have to tell us that, and that's nobody's business.
That's also true.
I realize that might seem like a point of insecurity when other people might seem more educated or have accomplished this or that. It's kind of irrelevant. You may need more help with editing. I don't know what your actual background is. You know what I mean? Like you may pay somebody to take a look at it when you're done. But I mean, I do that and I got an English degree. So, you know, put that out of your mind.
Yep.
As always, I agree with everything Aaron said, because everything Aaron says and does is correct. But you may want to look at doing this as a larger scale project. Maybe look at it as a trilogy. Maybe look at it as a saga. Like, don't try and shoehorn everything into the first movie. If George Lucas had tried to make the entire Star Wars trilogy one movie, you would have ended up with a movie like Rise of Skywalker. That is the cliff notes of lots of movies. And like, you know, it doesn't actually hit anything. I would say two things to be mindful of, though. If you do look at it as an expanded world, as a longer story or a saga, remember you need your first book to be relatively standalone, especially as an unknown author. You know, people aren't going to just rush to sign you to a 5-book deal when nobody knows who you are. So make sure the first one lands, and then, you know, be prepared to expand. And with the hero's journey, y'all know I preach the gospel of the hero's journey all the time, but it is a way. It's not the way. It's just a way to tell a story.
Yeah.
And so maybe, you know, decide who your main character is, because there is always one main character, even in ensembles. People think there's not, and they point at things like Game of Thrones. It's like Jon Snow's the main character of Game of Thrones. Like, you spend a lot of time with the others, but I mean, he is the protagonist.
Sorry, that was a separate thing. Go ahead.
Yeah. So pick your one and see how does their story fit along the hero's journey. You know, if that's the spoke that your wheel is going to turn around, how does that person go through these steps of the journey? And how can you tell that effectively over a single book or perhaps multiple books? And then, you know, go from there.
Yeah. Speaking of somebody who writes in multiple points of view and could arguably be said to have a book with two main characters, one thing that has someone pointed out to me and I super agree with is that in Empire of Exiles, Amadea is the main character, but Quill is the protagonist. And the split there is you find out more about Amadea. A lot of the story centers on Amadea, but Quill is the one who moves the story. Mm-hmm. Quill is the one whose actions makes the story change. And so that might be a case too, where you have a split there, where Quill is more, there is a change arc to him, but he is a more static character than Amadea, who is, you know, more is fundamental in a different way, but someone is going to move the general thrust of this story along. And here's another thing. If you were imagining this book as completed, probably someone is going to be on the cover copy. Who is the person that you would go to sell this book saying that it's about?
Yeah.
And start from there. And then the people that support that story and help that story become something more complex, they can have points of views in here. Yep. And that will, I think, help you divide it up. Because there's another thing is like, maybe you tell this story and if this one isn't the one that hits, you got another one in the chamber. Nobody's going to say, have you written any other novels that didn't take off in this world? No one cares. But if the next one hits and people are like, actually, we love this, now you've shown, hey, you can sell this other book because people do like this concept, they might be more interested in looking at that one. Mm-hmm. So again, it's not a bad thing to have multiple stories in the world, if you know you're not pre-sold on anything.
Yep. I know you said you're new, so you've probably already heard us say this, but if not, say it now. The most important thing is just get something done.
Yep.
Don't get hung up in the paralysis by analysis. Just tell your story beginning, middle, and end, and then worry about the rest of it later.
You know, it helps with that. Organization.
I'm just organization. outlining organization, you know, yeah. I am violently against pantsing. I know neither of
violently.
You.
Violently.
You're less violently against it, but I know neither of you do it. In that,
I mean, here's the thing. I know you put this out of your brain a lot. I have pantsed a novel, but here's the thing. The ending sucks.
I was about to say. I appreciate you not making me the monster. I have to like say unkind things, especially because he took his glasses off when he said it. We had this Superman cleaning Clark Kent moment.
It was kind
you know
of
what I mean. Yeah. Exactly. I'm all like, well, come on, you know. Now there's an AOE stun effect here. But I think a lot of people have wrestled with this again before George R. Martin's untimely passing. And when he used to write good books, God rest his soul.
Well, here's the thing. I'll actually take a weird stance on this that I don't really take. I actually think a lot stuff like this is kind of George R. Martin's fault because, like, he kind of really made popular. Just have a bunch of characters just give them all point of views.
That's the exact point.
Just do it.
And that worked great until it didn't.
Yeah.
Because it's just like when you watch those cool domino displays, you know what I mean? Where you get the first domino and you knock it over and then they start going all out and everything. And it's like a borderline Rube Goldberg machine. And like a pattern's emerging, and you're like, yeah, you're like, they're gonna make a thing, and then it's like, yeah, but what if they didn't? Like, oh, well, now I don't care. Yeah, all right.
But again, for just not to say that that is anything like what you're doing, we're talking about the George R. Martin multi POV thing.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I fully agree with all of you. Like, seeing, figuring out who's this plot is about. Honestly, I'm that the Amadi thing and Quill's gonna mess me up for a couple days now. so yeah, the hero's journey though, yeah. Like, here's the thing. I'll do the George Lucas thing too. George Lucas didn't even stick to the hero's journey. And he's the one that sang the praises of Campbell. That is why Anakin had an immaculate birth, is because he's like, I'm getting it in there, it's happening.
There's literally a mentor. There's literally a cave he fears to enter. You know what I mean? It's pretty overt once you know it.
But what I'm saying is, like, don't just because, like, something says, like, this is the outline of a hero's journey, it doesn't mean that if you don't hit one of those points that you failed. It just means that that is a different turn that your story took.
Yeah. And again, it is a way. It's not the way.
Yes.
You know? A highly effective way that I like and use, but by no means the only way, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that helped.
I know we're supposed to be talking about something else, but give us another question here.
I haven't prepped another one. I mean,
just shotgun, let the universe provide.
Here we go.
I'm going to stall for you while you already got it.
Yep.
Okay, shotgun offense. Here we go.
So this is from Chris. Chris says, "Hi, gang. I have a manuscript that I have been through and through critiquing and editing, and I want to soon start quoring process. The problem is I'm struggling to come up with comp titles. Remember, B-Dave asked for this. I feel like I'm too close to my own work to make any comparisons, and everyone else that has read the story hasn't been able to suggest authors or titles that they think are relevant. The best I can come up with is Fantasy SEAL Team 6 in a world with Game of Thrones level politics, but I fear that won't cut it with agents.
Yeah.
What's the best way to get relevant comp titles? Thanks."
Okay. Comp titles, I hate them.
Well, real quick,
but they
for
are
people
very
don't
necessary.
Know, what is a comp title?
Oh, yes. So a comp title is another book that is out, is being sold, that is relatively successful, that you can say, my book is like this. And that helps agents kind of place it in the market and helps them think about people they might want to submit this to. If you know that this book, for example, has a lot in common with, a book I just read recently, The Obsidian Tower by Melissa Caruso. Very great, guys. You should check it out. Then you can say, that was published by Orbit. We might want to go to Orbit. So here's the deal. There are a couple of rules with comp titles you should know. One, they should be fairly recent. You might have written, this is where it gets into kind of a gray area. Like, you can explain something as being like Jane Eyre set on a space station. That is a great way to describe something. Mm-hmm. The Jane Eyre is not a comp title.
Yeah.
Because one, that's just it does not give anybody any idea of what the market is like for this. And two is the second rule. You don't pick something that is crazy successful.
Yeah.
Because frequently how do I say this nicely? Often when people pick crazy successful things, it shows agents you don't know what you're talking about. Yep. If I say my book is like Harry Potter meets Game of Thrones, maybe it's a magical school story with a lot of politics, but those two things hit big in a way that very few things do. And so if those are the only things I can think of to compare, I don't sound very well read. This is the best way to get comp titles. You need to read more.
Yeah.
But here's another thing that I will strongly suggest. As someone who writes slightly off the wall things occasionally, I hate coming up with comp titles. But what I have found is that it is useful to say it has the X of this book and the Y of this book. So when I sent out Empire of Exiles, I think I compared it to City of Stairs, by Robert. Oh my God, I've forgotten his name. It's a good book. City of Stairs guy. Because because that sort of has a mystery component. Robert Jackson Bennett. And, man, I forgot the other thing. Another person said it was like Goblin Emperor by Catherine Addison, but faster paced and with a stronger plot, right? So you could say, like, it has the world building of the Goblin Emperor with the fast-paced mystery of City of Stairs. Now, this gives them 2 points of reference and lets them kind of go, okay, those both fit well for those reasons. If I had something that was both of these, I'm interested. And this is also a place where when you're querying and you look at what agents... what they've represented, what they have on their manuscript wish lists, you can find things where, you know, I might go specifically to Robert Jackson Bennett's agent and say, hey, this is kind of like City of Stairs, but with more Goblin Emperor thrown in. You like City of Stairs, obviously. Why don't you check this out? So those are basic rules, right? Something recent, like in the last couple years, something that does well, but is not like, you know, market blowing. And another thing I've seen, like, you can sometimes use non-book examples if they're really spot on, but you really only want to use one and you really want it to not be too, again, not too old.
Ridiculously sort of popular.
Yeah, right. If you're going to do a How Catch'em kind of mystery, you probably want to cite Poker Face instead of Columbo. Because you can say, look, people are watching Poker Face a lot, but, and yes, Columbo is huge, but Columbo is huge because it's been around for so long and your book's, you know, fresh and new. Yeah. I also have seen agents who say, do not use movies and TV shows and things like that, because that's not what you're selling me.
Yeah.
And they operate differently, but sometimes there is something that has hit the cultural zeitgeist in a way that it can be very appealing.
I will say, Aaron obviously knows 1,000% more about the publishing route, because I've not gone through the mainstream publishing route, but I've done it very much with film. Mm-hmm. And, let me ask you this, Aaron, cause I know how it works in the movies and I know how I think it works is sometimes, I've got the next City of Stairs. I should take it to who published City of Stairs can be a double-edged sword, because maybe they're very much like, we just published City of Stairs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So that is a thing too. You definitely, this is sort of only part of your query letter, because you also need to describe why your book is its own special shiny thing, which is not City of Stairs, because that already exists, right? Like, you definitely don't want to be like, I've written a book that is exactly like this other book that I already know sells, because that book's already doing the selling.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that even saying that it's got the this from this and the that from that in and of itself is useful. Because again, in the movie world, it is one of those things that everybody rolls their eyes at it and they say it's so cliche, but everybody does it. If you don't do it, people get mad at you. Mm-hmm. Like, people want you to say it's Jurassic Shark. It's Fast and the Furious in space. You know what I mean? Like, they don't
Fast
actually
and the about to be Fast and the Furious in space.
Fast and the it already was. Like, they did it at least once, right? You know, but you know, even I think it would be so useful if you were like, it's got the action and family dynamics of the Fast and the Furious with the you know the peak the period grunge of Peaky Blinders. You know what I mean?
You said Blank. Period, and I was immediately like Jane Austen's Fast and the Furious, and I'm so in for it. I'm so in for it. Look, I don't even understand what it is, but I'm just going to put my money down right now.
I was about to say, if Pride and Prejudice and Zombies can sell a million copies, Jane Austen's Fast and Furious can sell a million copies. Well, there you go. That was the will of the living force that decided that somebody needed to hear that there. That's why we
Mr. Darcy just drifts up. Good day. Right.
But he's still drifting in a carriage. Yeah.
Yeah. I want to add dragons into this.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Might be an overdone kind of thing.
Wait, I'm going to tell you guys here in chat an idea that this one I am going to keep to myself. I know I said amateurs keep these ideas to themselves, but I want you to get hit in the face when I.
He's like, I'm about to rewrite the script.
I got that yesterday, and I was like, oh shit, I got to write that down. Yeah. I was like, oh, I got to write that down. Okay.
Yeah.
That's the next one in the chamber.
Please do.
One in the chamber. Yeah. Okay.
You'll have to stay tuned, listeners.
Indeed.
I hope those. I hope that answered your questions for both Francesca and Chris. Listeners, if you're out there and you want, I want my question read and answered on the show, you can send them into writingaboutdragonsshit@gmail.com, and we will get to them in a future episode. Vague. So tonight's topic is critiquing. We've talked about this a few times. I think it even came up on a show recently, but I thought doing an entire show or at least a whole topic about critiquing would be interesting. Why can't I just tell my friends their writing sucks? By the way, none of my friends out there, none of your writing sucks. That was just an intro joke.
I think the fact that you had to couch that in and that was just a joke says one thing. Don't get flowers.
It's so difficult because there's two intersections. And I encounter this a lot because people ask me to read their writing all the time. Sometimes friends, sometimes not friends. And you got an X and a Y axis that can be difficult to calculate. Mm-hmm. You got the fact that some things are just subjective. You know, mm-hmm. some things just aren't your taste, you know, if it was up to me, 50 Shades would have never seen the light of day and they moved a couple units of that book, you know, so sometimes it is to taste and then some things are just bad, you know, and so I know I recently read something for somebody and when somebody asks me to read, I will ask them in advance. I'm like, okay, so check this out. Are you just asking for my just general feeling? Are you asking for, you know, a harsh critique? Are you asking for mechanical notes of, you know, this fell flat, maybe move this here, switch this here type thing? And this person was like, disassemble it. Now, even when someone says disassemble it, I'm never trying to be pedantic and I'm never trying to be cruel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm just like, you know, you want you're writing Superman. You want it to be, you know, his tale of an immigrant and an outsider, and you have him just born in Kansas, right? And it's like, well, maybe he should be an alien. If you want him to be that far removed, maybe he should be from space. You know what I mean? And then you're like, what? And you're like, maybe he could just be raised by people in Kansas. You know, like I'll come at it like that. I never will be like, your premise is dumb, or, you know, like, I think the harshest thing I will say is one of two things. Either this already happened, this well-known piece of media has already done the thing you're trying to do quite well. And the bare minimum, you need to differentiate yourself from that. Or you tell me why you think this is something people want. Mm-hmm. You know, like you could write 300 pages on watching an ice cube melt. I mean, you can.
Yeah.
But who wants that? You know? But that's it. I'm done. I know Aaron has many words on this.
Yeah. I like the point in particular that you're never trying to be cruel.
Yeah.
If someone is asking you for feedback, they're asking for help making something as good as it can be. Helping them figure out how to say what they're trying to say. And that's not a place where insults are going to do much. I guess I don't want to speak for everybody's relationship. Maybe that's the relationship you have, but I don't know any authors that are like, yeah, tell me I'm shit, and they actually mean it.
Yeah.
They say that sometimes, but it's not true. This is another thing. I feel like, I don't know what it's like right now, but when I was a baby writer and I was looking at, like, you know, online crit groups and just like, how do you do this? Right. I feel like there's a lot of sort of focus on and idealization of a brutally honest critique.
Yeah.
Where it's just, we're going to tell you everything that's shit about this story because you need to hear it. And if you tell anybody gives you compliments, that's wasted time and that's fluff and you don't need that because you're a real writer. And I'm sorry, that is all garbage. So just to start at the beginning, if someone asks me for a critique, right, the first thing I'm going to do, assuming I am not being paid to do this as an editor, which I don't do anymore, but I used to, I will say, what do you want out of this, right? And if you are asking for the critique, be honest. But if you're, let's pretend you're doing the critique, because I think that's the angle we're coming from, right? Like somebody is asking you for your feedback.
Yeah.
So sorry, I've had a migraine all day, so if I'm a little fuzzy, guys,
all good.
It's because my brain's still running a little bit on low gear. So that's the first thing. Like, what do you want out of this? And it is okay to give an answer like, I am just feeling really overwhelmed and I need someone to tell me that this is worth working on. I need a cheerleader, right? Yeah. And be honest about that. Because if you ask someone for feedback and what you actually need is a cheerleader, everybody's going to be in a bad mood.
Yeah.
If you are done with this thing and you are ready to take it out, and you are asking for what you really want at this point is just, how do I take where this is and bump it up a level? Ask for that. If you're about to take it out and you're not ready to hear, this is fundamentally flawed in these ways, you should speak up. So that's I think the first thing is just like, get some ground rules down about what you're going to do. And then the other part of it is, if you're going to critique, I think Beat is absolutely right. There's a lot of things that are just your personal taste. And I think as much as possible, assume competence of the person who has handed you their work. They are doing what they intended to do, and they know what options were out there, and they chose this path. And so what you are trying to do is read it, not as unless they've asked, no, just read it as a reader and tell me what you would think if you would pick this book up at the bookstore or the library. What's your impression? And if you're like, I read 30 pages and I would have put it down, that's an impression. That's an answer. But if you're getting into the feedback of like, this character arc felt like it dropped off and I lost my place and stuff like that, then you're not also necessarily being asked to say, you named him Kyle and I knew a Kyle once and he was a dick. That's irrelevant.
Yeah.
Things that are your personal taste that might make this book not for you are less helpful when it comes to critique. Yeah. You might, if you have that relationship with a person, sort of mention like, I don't like a May-December romance. You're going to lose me almost right away with that. But I will read it assuming that the book is structured around this and you are not coming in wanting to make those people the same age, because that's not the story you're telling. And so I'm going to come in and read and say, well, okay, I think you need to make their interests align more strongly in the beginning, so I understand why they're around each other and why they click. But saying, no, just do something different the way I would do it, this is not helpful. So as much as possible, put yourself in the position of the writer that's handed you their work and give advice on how to make that better. And then one more thing, and then I'll stop monologuing. The idea too, where you say, okay, I like disassemble this or tear it down to the studs or whatever, right? There are times where you're going to give feedback to someone and you are going to kind of have an option to try and tell them how to, I always described it as, you can try and tell them how you would take it to a 10.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And sometimes the person giving you their work, they're writing it like a 2. They're not at their full potential. They're still doing a lot of things that they need to get past. Telling someone writing a story at a 2, how to get to a 10 is just going to overwhelm them. It is too much. So you tell someone who's writing at a 2 how to get to a 4, right? Then, you know, you can work your way up. And your ability to give critique is going to fall somewhere around here. What you can help people get to is going to improve as you improve, and as you improve at critiquing specifically, because this is a different skill set. They very much are intertwined, but it's a different skill set. Not everybody who's a great writer is a great critiquer. Not everybody who's a great critiquer is a great writer, to be perfectly honest. There are some phenomenal editors who just don't really write. That's not what they want to do.
Yeah, it's that's, you know, being able to do and being able to teach are not interchangeable.
Yeah.
One thing I will say that is a beautiful thing, but a very frustrating thing, especially when it comes to submissions and critiques and the things of the like, are that art is subjective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And some people can do. I will go to my grave saying, if you scratch the name Cormac McCarthy off the front of the road, people would be like, the dumbest shit I've ever read in my life. And that book won every award, you know, because, and it's not that it isn't a good story, because it very much is, but it's like he had built the goodwill of being Cormac McCarthy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As I always tell people, if Tolkien had published The Silmarillion first, we'd have never heard of it. You know? There's a reason why it was The Hobbit first, and then The Lord of the Rings, and then like, oh, you nerds want to get down in it, then okay, all right, well, fine.
Bring out the good stuff.
Yeah.
It's the potent stuff.
Yeah. I think at the risk of repeating myself, I think the most important thing that I think is universally applicable is, before I open this, what are you asking me for? You know, let's just be very clear on what the expectation is, because I'm going to read it differently based on that. Yeah. I know people that are like, don't even tell me if there's typos. I'm like, well, tell me, you'll save me some trouble. You know what I mean? Like yeah. I'm not going to get mad at you. You know what I mean? If you said effect and you meant affect here or something, I would be like, hey, cool. Thank you. Because that wasn't going to come up any other way. Great. You know, but I also know a lot of people, and this is kind of normal, that can be very precious about their stuff. Now, I won't lie. My preciousness manifests as like, I know this is dope, but if you don't see it, you just have bad taste. But you're not going to offend me, but me showing something
just
to,
like, I'm sorry, you're wrong.
Right.
I love you anyway.
but I'm also saying I'd have passed on Twilight. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's subjective.
Yeah.
You know. I do think, Aaron is absolutely right. It is a skill. I think I've been in the game long enough that I joke about saying I'd have passed on Twilight and 50 Shades. I'd like to believe I could have seen that. I'm like, there's something here. It's not for me, but there's a thing here.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because I've read enough stuff. And also, I will say this one last thing, and then Trevor hasn't gotten to say anything at all. I'm going to stop monologuing. I think there is a distinction between, is work saleable, and is it going to be a New York Times bestseller and win a Pulitzer? You know, I think it's all well and good to want to write the next Harry Potter. Statistically speaking, you haven't and you won't. You know, the odds drop to zero if you don't finish the damn thing. But, you know, the odds are low at best. You know, the secret is to just make the best thing that you can make, and understand, as we have said before, you're going to come back 10 years from now and read it, and hopefully you'll still like it, but you'll be like, oh, I see what little me was getting at. You know what I mean? Yeah. Oh, little buddy, you know.
Oh, okay. Little guy. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes, Trevor.
So I mean, I think one of the things that I wanted to say was I think one of you mentioned, you know, that it is a skill to be able to give critique that isn't, I mean, one that isn't, you know, hurtful, but also that it is helpful. I have 100% been at points where, because like in my friend group, I was always known as the writer friend because I was always writing somewhere or something like that. And so occasionally people would hear this and they're like, here, read my writing. Tell me what you think. And I told a lot of people, I don't have the ability to properly do that. I'm not at the point that I can do that. I will read this and let you know if I enjoyed it, but I don't have the skills and tools to tell you how to fix it. Which I think is a very fair thing to say, especially if like you are that person that everyone is always trying to bring stuff to because you got labeled as the writer friend.
I'll also say you hit on something important there about fixing it.
Yeah.
So the sort of truism that gets thrown around, if someone tells you something's wrong, believe them. But if someone tells you how to fix it, ignore them.
Yeah.
And this is, I think, where a lot of critique gets kind of in the weeds, is that when you tell someone how they should fix a thing, often it's very easy to say how you would fix the thing.
Yeah.
And you may be wrong about it. Mm-hmm. I worked as an editor for a long time, and I don't know that I was the best at it. But one thing that I eventually realized through the process of doing it was to try and figure out what that author was trying to do and how to help them do it and how they would want to do it, and give them a couple of options to help them get to where they're going. And so what I find useful when giving critique is to say sort of like, you know, this is the thing that's off. And I can see a couple of ways you might go about solving that, mm-hmm. and give them sort of those options, but you don't, like, it's not your book, it's not your story, it's not your screenplay. So you don't necessarily know the best way to solve it, but you might be able to say like, okay, part of the problem here is that, you know, this character has not actually done enough to be effective to stay here by the end of the story. So you could make them useful here by doing that, or you could take them out of the story, or you could make them jump over to the villain side. Those are three very different stories, and that might help them get the kind of the idea going. Yeah. I find if you do a critique, like with, you know, either with one person or in a group setting, that when it comes to the like solving of the problems time, that is a good place to sort of brainstorm. And I say that as someone being critiqued and as someone critiquing, because if I'm critiquing your work, I really want to talk to, this actually gets into a different topic, which is sort of the dynamic of a critique group, right? But there are a lot, if you've ever taken a writing class, they probably used what's called the Milford method, where the author sits down with a notepad and everybody goes around and they give their feedback. They'll say what they liked, and then they say what they didn't like and what they think you could do to fix it. And they go around, and the author is not allowed to talk. So everybody gets a turn talking, and they get to write notes. And then at the end, they can ask some clarifying questions. This is like the good part of this is, if you've ever been in a writing class, there's always one dude who wants to argue with everything. Mm. Oh, she's not allowed to argue. However, once you are pretty confident in your work and you're trying to get somewhere, I find it really, I hate doing the Milford method at this point, because I want to talk about, if somebody brings up a problem, I would like to stop and talk about that problem. I would like to be able to say, here's what I was trying to do. I don't want to hear your theories of what I was trying to do, because clearly it's gone off the rails. So let's stop for a second. Mm-hmm. Here's what I was trying to do. If you know now, this is what I was trying to do, and you felt like it was going this way, what can we all talk about that will help bring it over here? How can we make this story be what I was going for?
It has a very parent-teacher conference and the kids being talked about sort of feel to it.
Yeah, I get it. Baby writers, it's very easy to get defensive and to want to like argue about.
Well, so that was actually something that I did want to bring up. I mean, finish your thought if you had more, but it was essentially talking about like, okay, how about
more?
Okay, well, that's fair. Well, let's do this. How about taking critique?
This is where it can be difficult, right? Because on the one hand, you are not your work. Yeah. You know, you are not your work. Someone, even if they do try and tear it down to the studs, because unfortunately, some people do take great glee in being mean with this stuff under the guise of trying to help you. So separate yourself from that. But you also have to remember, once again, art is subjective.
Yep.
The fact that that person doesn't like it doesn't mean it's bad. To Aaron's exact point, what was going through my head is, if you were like, well, I thought I was heading this way and you thought I was heading east, how can I more effectively show that I'm heading north? you might be doing a great job showing that you're heading north, and you know that person just didn't get it, or was, you know.
Which honestly, like that conversation can be very helpful for that, because they're like, oh well, when you said this, I assumed these things, and then it's a matter of I changed this one word, I moved this sentence to the beginning of a paragraph so you don't miss it. Like often those things where someone's like, I thought you were going all the way over here. I thought this whole book was going to be a different thing. It's because they misread something. And your only job at that point is to make sure that misread is harder to make.
Yeah. Yep. I think again, understand that, you know, you are not your work, and therefore, yes, you care about it, but you should not necessarily be offended if somebody is pointing out kinks or flaws that you can improve. Again, the most important thing for me, the number's three. If I hear the same thing three times, then I'm like, oh, that's really a thing. Yeah. You know, especially if you hear wildly contradictory stuff, like to continue the Superman analogy. One person tells you Superman was too strong. Another person tells you Superman wasn't strong enough. The third person tells you Superman's just right. Superman's probably about just right. You know, if all three of you are like, Superman's too strong and I don't see the point. Like to continue the, you know, this analogy to the point of breaking, I would say something like, whoa, maybe you need kryptonite. You know what I mean? Like if Superman's too strong, maybe you need kryptonite. I will say recently I did some pretty heavy, I don't even like the word critique. It's almost got a negative connotation to it, but right? that's what it was. You know, I read and gave notes. I gave feedback.
Yeah. Feedback.
Yeah. In what there was a couple things that I brought up. Like one of the things was, now this was a screenplay, so it's a little different, because remember in the format of a screenplay, you got some things that are written on the page, but if a character doesn't say it, the audience doesn't know it. And so they were saying all these things about characters in the descriptive text, but like there was things like nobody ever said the main character's name out loud. You know, and I had to point that, because they've seen the name on the screen, you know, 70 times, but it's like nowhere does someone say, hi, Aaron, hi, Trevor, you know. There was a situation where
I find that so wild.
Yeah, it happens. There was a situation where essentially I'm being vague because, you know, hopefully this work's going to see the light of day, where it's like, for lack of a better word, somebody was gonna run away, and one woman was gonna steal another man's wife, and the two women were gonna run away together. And there was a lot of buildup of the fact that woman number one was kind of a player and known for it. And then that, you know, kind of a love at first sight thing with woman number two. But when you show this person have like three flings, and then the fourth fling comes along and it's like, I'm willing to risk hanging for you. It's like, well, why? You know what I mean? Like, I need something. And the exact example I gave was in the Romeo and Juliet, the Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes, when they see each other through the fish tank. So I was like, you need that. You need your kissing you scene. You need that, you know, where you're like, oh, it's different this time. Yeah. You know, like, oh, no. You know what I mean?
Rosalind, who?
Yeah.
Exactly. And then you go on. And I will say this one last thing is when I do give the critiques, I don't want them to tell me any context in advance. And when I ask somebody to read for me, I don't give them any context, because I'm not going to be standing next to the reader.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to point at the page and be like, well, okay, so that guy's the main character, you know, like that's a, you know, turns out Darth Vader's going to be his father a little later on, but trust me, it's going to be like, you don't get to have that, you know, like it's got to be able to stand alone on its own two feet. You know, I think like anything, you just can't take it personally, because it's not personally. And if you feel like someone's trying to be mean to you, just say thank you and don't ask that person for feedback anymore. Yeah.
Do what I used to do to griefers on Halo 2. Just respond with thanks for the feedback.
This is a thing. So for getting feedback, that's a thing I want to draw a big old circle around, is that some people are going to give you feedback, and what they are most focused on is saying something.
Yep.
Saying something to make them sound smart.
Social media in a nutshell.
Yep. Like you know, if you have, this is a bad fit, frankly. Someone who is full of that helpfulness, that wants to be like the one that tells you the thing, but they're not actually talking very clear. When you hear them talk about your work, none of this is resonating. And not because, like again, be honest with yourself. Like, no work, I think, comes out of your head fully formed like Athena. It you will need to work to kind of get your vision exactly where you want it.
Mm-hmm.
But when someone says, you know, I don't know. I was in a writing group once with a guy who read the part of Brimstone Angels and said, I don't buy Lorcan. And I was like, okay, what do you not buy about him? Because that's important. He's like, I don't know, I just don't buy him.
I was literally going to give the example, if you've heard the thing of like, well, I just don't believe the hero, you know?
Yeah,
like,
this isn't helpful.
That was literally the example I was going to give.
It's not. Like, that might be like, there's something off here that I could look at. But if you can't explain to me why you're feeling that way, your feedback's not useful. You know, also when it comes to like solving problems, I have very little patience for when people give me what I think is very obvious advice for this stage in my career. I had a character in Empire of Exiles who drives me absolutely up the fucking wall. And I was having trouble with him. And a friend of mine was like, well, did you give him a flaw? And I'm like, what is this? 101 fiction? Of course he has flaws. That's not the problem. The problem, it turns out, is I am very allergic to his headspace and I never put enough of it in a scene. And so once I know that, I just have to go back and do it again because I never put Reach's brains in the scene for some reason. So someone coming to you to that's sort of looking to say something, either if they're nitpicking or they're just telling you like vague things, you ignore those people. Like, that isn't helpful. If you're, you know, and it's a similar thing is like, if you're getting advice from people and it feels like they didn't really read your book or they didn't really like get it, you know, if it's one person, you can totally ignore them. If it's a lot of people, it might be something wrong with your book.
Yep.
But at the same time, that kind of feedback of just like, I just didn't get it or something, it doesn't speak well of that person as a critiquer. Which also just, I wrote down a couple of quick things. One, ask people for critiques that whose opinions you respect.
Yeah.
You can like people very much and not necessarily think much of their ability to analyze their writing. So be judicious here. Ask them questions about why they had those feelings, like, because pinning down what is going on is what's going to tell you what to do. People have feelings about all kinds of things. And when you pick at something for a little bit and you scratch at it and you realize like, oh, you just have a thing about that, it tells you necessarily don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if someone's like, you really need to have a betrayal here. and if you poke at it a little bit, you find out like that's their favorite story twist. You're like, maybe I don't, if it doesn't feel good.
What if the lovers were enemies first?
Yeah.
And you're like, that's not this book. The
why
other
is, they,
thing
why
I will
is
say,
the ending happy?
Yeah. The other thing I will say is in the context of sort of giving people context before they read. I totally agree with B. Dave, like, don't set people up with stuff, but you can, and I do recommend this, giving them sort of a questionnaire for afterwards if you want to kind of guide their feedback. For things like, I'm concerned this mystery was very obvious. When did you figure out who the murderer was? You know, I am curious how you feel about this love triangle. Are you rooting for it to go one way or the other? Or, you know, did the flow work okay? Because I'm particularly concerned about that. And kind of making sure that they address things in the feedback that you are particularly concerned about, it can be a really great idea just to save you time. And it will still be the case that they will tell you other things where they're like, the mystery was fine. The fight scenes, I could not follow for a second. Like, that's useful, but making sure that they hit on those details can help. And it can also sort of help if you want to give them like, hey, I'm really curious how you feel about the unfolding of the mystery. So pay attention to that when you read, but you wouldn't want to say something like, when did you figure out the killer, when, you know, you don't necessarily want to preset them up to look for the answer.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when we're talking about these things about taste and the subjective nature, if somebody said something like, I couldn't follow the fight scenes, I would ask, what's a book that had fight scenes you enjoy?
Yeah.
Because then if they can't tell you, or if they're like, well, I never enjoy the fight scenes,
okay, not you. This is not for you.
Yeah.
Because that's another fact. Your book is not going to be for everybody.
Correct.
There are going to be people who are like, this was terrible or too slow or too fast or whatever. And that, you can't do anything about that.
Once again, read the 1-star reviews of literary classics on Goodreads. You know, read people dunking on Shakespeare, you know?
What did he ever do? Jeez.
Nothing, because he was a pseudonym, you know? So Francis Bacon wrote all his plays. Yeah.
Well, we're getting towards the end of the episode here. Any last thoughts on critiquing?
I should point out, because this is the internet, I do mean sarcasm there. But I'm not going to lie. In my life, I've gone back and forth. There's strong pros and cons to whether or not he wrote it. I'm currently over on Big Willie is the man. You know what I mean? But it's title. It's title.
Big Willie.
You ask me next year, I might be like, ah! Yeah.
Yep.
I would say don't be afraid of critique, either getting it or getting it. Yep. You know, it's really helpful, especially if you haven't done it before. It's really helpful to know what's okay. Here's the thing. If you're giving critique, to go back to that idea of the brutally honest critique is the best critique. I have never met a writer who didn't blossom when you tell them what they're doing well.
Yep.
It's not just let me pat you on the head so you feel good. Because this is the thing you'll hear a lot too, is like, do a critique sandwich. Say a good thing, say a bad thing, say a good thing.
Bun meat bun.
Right? And so that's one thing, is just keeping people's spirits up. But the other part of that is, a shocking number of people have no idea what they're good at. Mm-hmm. And this can manifest in all kinds of ways. It can be like, why do you keep writing this when you are so good at this? Have you ever thought about doing this more? Or as simple as, you know, the best scenes in here are the ones where these characters have these revelations about their, you know, the thing that's actually going on and how it affects them. And you didn't do that for this one character. And I missed it because I loved these so much. Mm-hmm. You're helping them find the things that they need to sort of bring more of themselves into. And so the idea that any critique is only about what's not working is so false to me, that adding in that those positive elements not only helps, you know, make them stay interested in this project, because really when you hear just like crap, it gets like, okay, I get it, just throw it in the garbage. Or I'm not going to listen to anybody anymore. But also it helps guide them towards the things they do really well. And sometimes you can take the thing you do really well and move those skills into something that you don't do as well, depending on what it is.
I would say it is understandable that you want to, you know, protect your precious baby and, you know, caress it and hold it to your bosom. But people will shit on it. Like, they will. Like, past a certain point, people will shit on it just because it's popular.
Yep.
Like, I've known many people in my life that were like, oh, that's a bestseller, I immediately don't like it. Which is like a weird and pretentious and pedantic way to live. I'm like, you miss out on a lot of stuff. But I mean, there's a 0% chance that there's not going to be people that dunk on it. And let's say you're blessed to have fabulous success. Let's just say you're blessed to write a cultural phenomenon. That just means there'll be that many more people that make it their whole identity to shit on the thing you made.
Yeah.
You know? So don't take any of it personally at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the thing, is you gotta get to a place where you, like, the thing is not you. The thing is, like, the thing you're creating, and you want to get it to be as good as possible. And you have to, one, be able to think of that as a separate thing, but also really believe in it. Because actually, this is another thing. Sorry, Trevor, we're just going to go along because I keep thinking of things.
I don't know what sound that was I just made, but yeah, go ahead.
What you really don't want to get into, right? And this is that sort of analysis by paralysis thing we talk about sometimes. But I've been in, you know, I tried a bunch of writing groups through like Meetup and stuff. And I remember in one of them meeting this guy who'd been working on the same book for like 15 years or something.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Just like rewriting it, right? Because he kept asking for feedback, and then he kept trying to incorporate everybody's feedback. And what that says to me is that he does not have, like, if you're constantly trying to remold this thing, you don't have a true gut core belief in this that you are bouncing other people's ideas off of. Mm-hmm. So if someone reads something of mine and says, I think it's supposed to be this, my belief in what I've already created, my understanding of where I'm going with that, is the thing that bounces off of. And so I can say, that's not it,
but I do see this little piece here. I could use that. I could use that to get where I'm going with this. Mm-hmm. And so this is another part of the critique, is like, when you take that feedback and you evaluate it, you don't have to take all of it. You don't have to even take all the stuff that makes sense, because if it doesn't match what you're trying to do, it's not the feedback for you. But do consider, like, you know, if they're pointing out a problem, like, it's the same thing. If they're pointing out a problem, listen. If they're pointing out a solution, ignore, right? There's still a part of that where if the problem doesn't quite sound like what it is, but you can kind of find where, oh, wait, actually over here, like, There's a thing in Empire of Exiles where the prologue ends with this, with the one character telling the others, start with the girl. Mm-hmm. And Rhiannon, who's been on this show, read that and said, you need to start the first scene with the girl. And I'm like, that's not what the story is, though. But I recognize there's a disconnect in that prologue to first chapter when I start with the sort of the characters that have the inciting incident. So instead I start with referencing the people who are talking. We are talking about why the Karatsis are such a mess to deal with, because that's who's talking in the first one. And so the problem was the disconnect, not the problem was this is the last line, this should be the first thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's a solution, it turns out. But it doesn't feel like a solution when you first hear it. So
yeah. I think the last thing I'm going to say is I am 100% sure there are folks listening to this right now that are like, oh, I can't let someone read my stuff. I'm way too nervous about that. I get it. Let me tell you the story. I once printed out a 12-page short story that I wanted my friends to read and tell me what they thought. So I handed it out to them all when we got to this coffee shop that we always hung out at. And I went in to go get a latte. And I was like, I'm doing fine. This is fine. And then I realized I was shaking. And I was not fine. And I was legitimately freaking out about my friends reading what I wrote and telling me what they thought. Fast forward, I handed off a book to Aaron M. Frickin' Evans and said, tear it apart. You'll get there. You'll get to the point that you can do that. It'll be fine.
Fear and excitement are the same feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. Friends, where can people find you and what awesome things you're working on?
You can still find me on Twitter at Aaron M. Evans. You can find me at Blue Sky, whatever my Blue Sky tag is. I don't know. You can order my new book, Relics of Ruin. I turned in the revisions.
Yeah.
So we are that much closer to it being a real, real thing. Or pick up the first book, Empire of Exiles, if you have not yet. If you like mysteries and you like epic fantasy, you will like these books. You can join me on twitch.tv/dungeonscrawlers on Mondays at 1:30 p.m. Pacific for concentration check, co-writing space. Come get some writing done with me. And then on Wednesdays at 6:30 p.m. Pacific for Westgate Regulars Fearful Symmetry, a D&D campaign that I DM where I've trapped them all in a demiplane populated by their greatest lies.
Bum, bum, bum. I'm a baby, all grown up. B. Dave Walters, I say words about things. I'm B. Dave Walters everywhere on an ever-increasing plethora of social media platforms.
Soon the tweetagrams ain't going to work anymore. Like, you're just going to fit so many other words in there.
It's currently the tweetagrams, but it's just the tweetaskaya dunagram threads, you know, of books, you know. So everywhere. Yep. Pre-order Aaron's book. Still got my programs that are going on. 14-day writer. Save you 5 years off of your writing journey. And thank you all
play,
for tuning in.
Play Marvel Multiverse in August so you can get that cool Conquering Kang supplement later in the year.
That is true. Also, you know, for anybody keeping score, especially from our homies that have followed us over here from Champions of Lore in times long past, Freely got a new epic skin today. So there you go.
Hey!
Yeah,
I wrote the flavor text for it.
That is true. And also, we found out that Frida has Freely mentioned in her flavor text, which I never knew, which is hilarious.
What?
Did you do that?
Maybe. Somebody which did. Part?
It's a long time
ago. Okay, we'll talk about
it. I'll look it up later because I'm curious. It sounds like something I would do.
I will just say my favorite thing is I gave him his walnut belt buckle that he got from Penelope. That's his wife. So he's all like epic got it out and he's got his little walnut belt buckle. So yeah, it's a fun time. It's amazing to have a character in a video game.
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter or anywhere else of these hellscapes at the Trevor. There's an A hiding in there. I'm also on Fearful Symmetry, which Aaron runs and is going, I think weekly now on Wednesdays. Is that right? Weekly?
Yes,
weekly now on Wednesdays.
You can hop in there at 6 p.m. to hear us talk about stuff, and then stick around at 6:30 for the actual show. But that is going to do it for this week's episode. Thank you all so much for listening. If you enjoyed this show, the best way to support is by leaving a review on your podcast service of choice and telling your friends about the show. If you have any questions like those that we answered today, you can send those into writingaboutdragonsandshit@gmail.com. And if you'd like to keep up to date on the show, you can follow us on Twitter @aboutdragons. But until next week, write about some dragons shit. Cool.